On August 10th, 2014, a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, outside St. Louis, shot and killed an 18-year-old young man by the name of Michael Brown. That shooting, which has been repeated far too often in American society, set off a series of protests that have become known as the Ferguson riots. Ferguson laid bare the national problem of police violence against young black men. And in many ways, it was the precursor to the Black Lives Matter movement, which began formally when police in St. Paul, Minnesota, killed another black man, George Floyd, several years later. But Ferguson is important in part because it's so complicated. Ferguson wasn't just the death of one black 18-year-old. The event created a movement, and from movements come leaders. It was another young man, Darren Seals, who emerged from Ferguson as a leader. And lead he did, until he was murdered. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Darren Seals was born in 1987 in Ferguson, Missouri, and grew up just a few blocks from where Michael Brown was killed in 2014. He had known the Brown family all of his life. And when a police officer shot and killed Michael, Seals became a de facto spokesman, not just for the family, but for many of the protesters tired of police violence against their community and against a political and cultural structure that takes African Americans for granted and offers them no hope of improving their lots in life. The Ferguson riots thrust Darren Seals into the spotlight, with his commentary appearing on news networks around the world covering the violence. He quickly became one of the most important and notable activists for racial justice and against gun violence and police brutality in the country. He co-founded an anti-police violence organization called Hands Up United and became involved in politics, describing himself on social media as a businessman, revolutionary, activist, unapologetically black, African in America, fighter and leader. He also became a vocal critic of the Black Lives Matter movement because it took millions of dollars in donations from billionaire George Soros, and it hijacked the movement in Ferguson. As you might suspect, Seals quickly came to the attention of the FBI, which has had its own long and bloody history with black activists in America. The FBI surveilled him, investigated him, and collected intelligence on him. But to what end? On the night of September 6th, 2016, Darren Seals was found dead in a burning car in a suburb north of St. Louis. He had been shot and placed in the car before it was set on fire. That murder has never been solved. We're very happy to be joined by filmmaker, journalist, author, and podcaster Ray Novoshelsky and by former Missouri State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. They're the creators of a new podcast series called After the Uprising, The Murder of Darren Seals. Ray and Maria, thank you so much for being with us. I know this is going to be a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Ray. Let's start with you. You and I have known each other for a long time, and I know that you have a nose for a story, whether it's about the CIA and the so-called War on Terror, or the Saudi government's involvement in the 9/11 attacks. We've had many conversations about these issues. This one, though, the murder of Darren Seals, fascinates me. So let's start at the beginning. A cop kills Mike Brown. The uprising begins in Ferguson. After a few days of chaos, activist leaders emerge, and one of them is Darren Seals. Take it from there.
Right. So Darren Seals makes a lot of enemies. This may be counterintuitive to a lot of people, but he was an outspoken critic of Black Lives Matter, because in Ferguson, they considered their movement to be something different and something that at least he felt was being co-opted by the kind of the broader national movement that we know as Black Lives Matter. So he had enemies who were activists. He had enemies who were members of the gangs that he had once dealt drugs for. He had enemies, obviously, among the police and perhaps amongst federal cops that he had been protesting to reform. And so cut to 2016, and he's found shot dead in a burning Jeep, and the question becomes, which of these many enemies is the one who chose to do him in. And that's where we, Maria and I, began 2.5 years ago as we started looking at trying to run down if we could figure out who had in fact murdered him.
Maria, you found yourself thrust into the very center of this historic event that was Ferguson. You were representing the 14th District in the Missouri State Senate, which includes Ferguson, and you became an important voice against police violence. Tell us about those days in Ferguson at the very start of the uprising. And tell us a little bit about the emergence of Darren Seals as a voice of Ferguson's African-American community.
From the beginning, there was no script. There were people who were coming together because they felt the injury of a young Black man laying on the streets for 4 hours. And so all of us, no matter what our backgrounds were, we were all standing there stunned and in disbelief. And so the protest didn't start actually until a few days after, but everyone was standing around gathering together, people from multiple gangs, people from the underground music world. We were just all gathering together, and you could see the pain in people's faces at that time. It had been the first time I held a grown man crying, in fact. And so Darren was among those people who were gathering amongst the many groups of people. And, you know, we were trying to get answers. And at the same time, at the very beginning, we also had a lot of police presence, and it was threatening. And I remember the first day of tear gassing, which was on the 1st, it was the Monday after, it was the 11th. And this type of violence our community has never experienced. And so that's really when the protests started and when you started hearing individual words. In fact, the first day of tear gassing, as you will hear reflected in the podcast, you hear about Spook getting shot. Well, I was there that night, and it was right off of West Wing Estates, I believe, and Darren references a person by the name of Spook. I didn't know the person's name. I just heard that a woman was shot in the eye, and that's all we knew. So Darren, as you will hear in this podcast, starts wanting to get the stories out of what is happening on the streets and how to find resolve when it comes to police brutality.
Ray, as Maria just noted, Darren Seals emerged relatively quickly as a leader in Ferguson. He was a serious person. He was quoted on CNN. He was quoted in the Washington Post. He was giving interviews to the international media. But because he was a serious person, he came to the attention of the FBI. And we know now, thanks to the Freedom of Information Act, that the FBI was surveilling him. In fact, the FBI described him as, quote, a revolutionary who has espoused somewhat militant rhetoric and has access to weapons, unquote. The FBI has a well-documented history of harassing activists and especially Black activists. How much of a problem was this for Darren Seals? And what was it that the FBI thought it could learn about him?
Well, this remains an open question. By the end of our 10th episode, we do have a pretty concrete idea as to what the purpose of that operation was. But it's opened in March of 2016, and he is murdered in September of 2016. So just taking that as a fact, it's pretty stunning when you realize that this charismatic, famous Black activist is murdered, and during the final 6 months of his life, the federal government is surveilling him. And yeah, it's natural to ask, what were they up to? What did they hope to get to? And it wasn't just them, but they led a fusion team that included St. Louis County and city police. And Mike German from the Brennan Center consulted on looking at this heavily redacted document. He's a former FBI agent, and you know, I'm sure you're well aware of him. He's got an illustrious reputation. And you know, he was looking at the specifics of a police pullover and felt that there was an obvious fishing expedition going on to try to find a gun in his vehicle, because Darren was, had been convicted of a felony and therefore couldn't have a gun. So it seems like they were trying to turn the screws on him in one form or another. They were not being terribly subtle when, you know, they seem to be almost the opposite. They seem to be sending a signal that the people around Darren would know that he was either cooperating or that they wanted him to be cooperating. And we think that served to endanger him ultimately.
Maria, when Darren was killed, and we'll get more into that in a minute, an FBI agent allegedly said, quote, "A conspiracy theory is already forming that Seals was killed by the police because of his Black Lives Matter affiliations," unquote. That is ridiculous, of course. Seals was an opponent of Black Lives Matter. But the statement seems odd to me. It seems like a deflection. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, as well as on the statement that I mentioned a moment ago, that the FBI believed Seals was, quote, "a revolutionary with access to weapons." In all seriousness, everybody in America has access to weapons. So what do you think we should make of all that?
Well, if you listen to the podcast, you'll find that a lot of people were trying to deflect. And there were some people who were unsure of which entity was responsible for Darren's death. So in some sense, you know, I personally believe that there were some who were in the law enforcement who wanted Darren to quiet down. In fact, the loudest voices, they always wanted us to quiet down. And Darren was one of those who was ferocious in his speech, and he was militant in his speech. And the status quo, whether it be the political establishment or law enforcement, wanted to shut that down. So there is irony in all of this, but I would also say there's deflection from all sides when you listen to this. And there are some stories that we don't discuss, that we can discuss later on, that is not reflected in the podcast in terms of this deflection. But I think people were confused. And there were some who were just really wanting to know from which corner of the earth did this threat come from. And that's what our 2-year journey was all about, is figuring it out and getting through the weeds and all of the smoke, as the young people say.
Thank you, Maria and Ray. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with filmmaker, journalist, author, and podcaster Ray Novoshelsky and former state senator Maria Chappelle Nadal about the murder of Darren Seals. Stay tuned. We have a lot more coming up. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with renowned filmmaker, journalist, author, and podcaster Ray Novoshelsky, and with former Missouri State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal about the murder of activist Darren Seals. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Ray, I want to talk about the podcast. You've just completed the podcast called After the Uprising, The Murder of Darren Seals. Just as Darren Seals was hitting his stride, finding his voice, he was found dead. And it wasn't just that he was found dead. He was murdered. He was shot and then placed in a car, and then the car was set on fire. Tell us about the investigation into his murder. What did the public learn?
Well, it's interesting. We now know what the police did or didn't do. And we know the extent of their investigation because only about 6 weeks ago, we had an episode 10, a final episode of the season, cut, ready to go. And we were somewhat satisfied that we had gotten to answers. And then we still don't know exactly how, but the entire police report into Darren Seals, the investigative report, fell into our laps. Our producer, John Duffy, a co-creator of the show, had made a request for things unrelated to Seals, and somehow, we don't know if there was a friendly party in the force or what, somebody accidentally sends him the report. So we know what was looked at here. But what I find striking is that the public, and especially the activist community that did their own investigation into this because they felt they were forced to, nobody ever heard a peep from the police or the prosecutors about what it was that they found. It doesn't seem that St. Louis County Police or prosecutors felt they owed some duty to the public or to the activist community to let them know what they had seen. And It's pretty astounding because, you know, I don't want to bury the lead. We do believe we solved this, and all 10 episodes are out, and anyone who takes this journey, by the time they get to the end, you know, there's a lot of true crime out there. There's not a lot that solves it, and this, if you take this journey, I think you will feel you know who did what and what happened to Darren Seals.
Maria, I'm interested here in the police angle. Many residents of Ferguson believe that it was either the police or the FBI who killed Darren Seals. Was there a belief anywhere in the Ferguson community that there was going to be an actual legitimate investigation? Did anybody really trust the process?
Absolutely not. Nobody trusted the process. I don't think that there was one activist that we interviewed that believed that the police were going to do their due diligence in investigating. As you will hear in the podcast, there's a lot of speculation based on what they see at the scene when Darren's body is found. And you know, we go on to look at evidence and hear audio from other people about what they see at the time. And you could tell that they just, in fact, in multiple cases in this podcast, people don't have a belief that police care about Black investigations when there's someone who was murdered, generally speaking. And so that's concerning. That is an institutional problem that needs to be dealt with ongoingly, no matter where you live. That perception needs to be dealt with head on because it people who didn't even know each other, who are from different places in Missouri or in Kansas or the places that, you know, where we interviewed people, none of them had a belief that the police were going to do their due diligence.
And if I may, too, because I'm a little, in terms of my answer, I probably should have mentioned that, you know, part of what was driving this this sense by activists and people in Darren's life that the police weren't doing anything was that when they got to the scene the next day, they found, you know, the door to his Jeep was lying there in the parking lot. Apparently bullet casings were still just sort of sitting there, having not been collected. There was this sort of perception that the whole thing represented a big middle finger that was clearly to be read by the community. No, you protested us. We're not looking into, you know, your Darren Seals death at all, which may or may not have proven to be the case by the end of this series.
And Ray, one of the things that's fascinating to me is the fact that Darren Seals' murder looked very much like the earlier unsolved murder of another Ferguson activist, DeAndre Joshua, who was also found shot to death in a burning car. Police say that they were unable to link the two killings, but the Daily Beast found four more cases of similar deaths in St. Louis County over the previous 2 years. That sounds like it could be either official murders, it could be a serial killer, or it could be somebody working to silence Black voices. What do you make of all that?
I think there were two primary threads that we looked at there, and we did come to an answer. But one of those threads is that there was someone who's now been called a serial killer, a very rare thing, a Black serial killer named Perez Reed, whose MO was arson, and it was also, you know, seemingly shooting through a car window, and he had murdered people allegedly in the same location, for instance, as DeAndre Joshua was killed. And we spoke with his brother, and his brother thought Perez was a serious contender as a candidate for at least who had killed DeAndre, if not Darren, because apparently DeAndre had taken him in a dice game, taken him for some money that day. And when he'd seen a similar thing happen to Perez, he said that Perez locked the man in a, you know, in a room and hit him with an iron, I believe was the quote. So we followed the trail of this serial killer to try to figure out if we could pin down whether he might be responsible for not only Darren and DeAndre's deaths, but these series of bodies found in car fires. But there was another lead that these seemed to connect to a particular cartel-backed gang in St. Louis, and an MO used by them as well. And as we look deeper at that, that proved to be a pretty As you know, John, we've been intimidated or attempted to be intimidated by the CIA on our past journalism, by the police. But I don't think I've ever been more scared than when I sat with Maria and looked who we believe to be a cartel-backed gang member in the eyes and told him that we had evidence that he may have committed murder.
That was a moment for both of us.
Wow. Wow. Maria, the Darren Seals case officially is still open, although I'm sure the police are doing literally nothing about it right now. What does the future hold here? Are Darren Seals' family members just supposed to move on with their lives? Are Ferguson's residents just supposed to forget about him? Do you expect any real justice to finally come out of this case?
Well, honestly, I think the 200-page police report shows that they did a due diligence. And the accountability is actually in the prosecuting attorney's office at this point, as the podcast will show. All along this entire process, in the 2+ years we've been doing this, we've been keeping the family up to date because we felt as though we needed to give them some resolve. But not just Darren's family, also the other families that were part of this. As we were talking about some of the family, one family in Kansas City, another family in Ferguson, we want it to be part of their healing. But in terms of Darren, the onus, frankly, is on the prosecuting attorney's office. And when that case was delivered, presented to the prosecuting attorney's office, it was under advisement. But the police did such a great job. This is the irony of it all. And it took our team, our investigative team, our producers, Ray and myself, to get the prosecuting attorney's office to even look at the case. And so I don't want to give the details out, but when you listen to the podcast, you're going to hear some amazing things. And what usually people would want to say about police, they're saying about the prosecutor's office.
Amazing. I have to say, first of all, this is a public service. You've hit a home run on this. We should all download this podcast. Thank you, Ray Novoshelsky, journalist, author, and podcaster. And thank you, Maria Chappelle Nadal, former state senator, for being with us today to talk about this very important issue. The great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, quote, "I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality," unquote. Every right-thinking person would agree with that. But that daybreak hasn't arrived for the people of Ferguson, Missouri. It hasn't arrived for the family of Darren Seals. In the meantime, it's up to the rest of us to keep up the fight. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. Please follow me on Substack, @John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.